Everybody, welcome to Random Trek Review. It's the podcast where we analyze, discuss, and review randomly selected Star Trek episodes. My name's Andrew. I'm the host this week of RTR, and I'm joined by my good buddy Matt. But, you know, Matt, I'm glad that you could take some time away from your convoluted human mating rituals to sit here and record with me today.
It was painful, but I'm willing to take a break for the sake of the podcast.
And that, of course, is a Odo quote from Broken Link. We are we're looking at a series, not a series. We are looking at a season finale this week, Matt. Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. They usually have a nice little cliffhanger at the end, so that's always nice to look forward to. So yeah, this is very exciting stuff.
All right, and a pretty memorable episode, or at least I hope that I remembered lots of it last week. So why don't you just give me a quick recall of how I did on my recollection, and give me a score out of 5 pregnancy sneezes.
I say she stops at 8.
Yeah, I win.
Before I get into that, there was one thing you mentioned when I said it was episode 26, and you seemed very surprised. I did some digging. Of all the series produced during the late 80s, early 90s, and early 2000s, so Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise, every season of each of those series had 26 episodes except 5.
Okay.
So Next Generation Season 2 was only 22 episodes.
Okay.
Which I think was due to a writer's strike.
Yes. It's also actually the reason why that season finale is the Shades of Grey. It was a clip show. And that was also part of that writer's strike, was that they couldn't actually get enough. They couldn't get the money, or they couldn't get the writers to do it. And so they kind of did this random clip show where Riker is injured. But yeah, I think you're correct.
Season 1 of Deep Space Nine was only 20 episodes. Season 1 of Voyager was only 16 episodes. And then Season 3 of Enterprise was 24, and Season 4 of Enterprise was 22.
So, and all the rest are 26?
All the rest are 26 episodes.
Okay. Wow. And Voyager Season 1 is actually, they only had a minimal run of episodes because it was on a new carrier, UPN. And so they actually only wanted 16 episodes when they did it.
Yeah.
It seems crazy by today's standards. That's the interesting part about it, actually, is that the idea of doing 26 episodes of a 40-plus minute show now, I don't think that you're going to see it again.
It would have been a grind, to put it mildly.
Right.
Now, as for your recall of Broken Link, it was actually pretty good. I think you definitely had... Yeah, I think you knew which one it was, mostly. You mentioned that Odo gets ill or sick, and they didn't know why, and that is quite true. That's the whole point of the episode. You mentioned that they took him to the Gamma Quadrant. You mentioned that this female shapeshifter was a prominent part of it. And you mentioned that they go to the Founder's homeworld. The one part that I think you got mixed up with the search was when you said that there was like a battle, and Odo and Kira got separated. So you... which is understandable, because they're very similar kind of episodes.
Right, and Kira's not even really in this one, because she's pregnant at this point.
She sneezed, and then that was it. So, but I think you definitely had a pretty good handle on this one, so I'm going to give you 4 pregnancy sneezes out of 5 for your recall of Broken Link.
Achoo, 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 achoo.
Gesundheit.
All right, so if you didn't watch this one, then you probably should, because it is a classic in terms of Deep Space Nine lore. It is from Season 4, Episode 26, and it aired back on June 17th, 1996. The guest stars are, special guest star, Andrew Robertson as Garak, Salome Jens as the female changeling, Robert O'Reilly as Gowron, or is it... Jill Jacobson as Shalan Arroya, I think that's how it's pronounced, and Leslie Bevis as Rionage. It was written by George Brozak, and it was directed by Les Landau. If you haven't seen it or you haven't seen it in a while, here's a brief synopsis. Garrick is playing matchmaker, trying to set the owner of the Bajoran restaurant up with Odo, when Odo is suddenly struck with a mysterious illness. He's ill, and Dr. Bashir doesn't know enough about changing physiology to help him out. He's having a hard time keeping his solid form, and by the looks of his molecular structure, in about 2 weeks' time, he may completely come apart. Over in Federation business, Gowron, the Klingon Chancellor, is making threats to reclaim planets from trios that are 400 years old. Captain Sisko decides that he needs to focus more on helping his constable, Odo, and readies the Defiant for a mission into the Gamma Quadrant and to Odo's home world. Shortly after leaving the wormhole on the Gamma Quadrant side, the Jem'Hadar and the female changeling, who says that this is the Founder's doing, rendezvous with the Defiant. Odo is being forced home to be judged for his crime of killing a changeling, the only time it's ever happened, I'll have you know, back at the end of Season 3. In a kind of strange side plot, Garrick is thwarted by Worf to revenge kill the Founders, landing himself in jail for 6 months, but that's not really the important part of the episode. The important part is Odo's judgment, which he accepts because he's the lawman for many, many years. His punishment? To become human. Now with a heart and lungs, a digestive system, and the same old face to remind him of what he once was, the crew heads back to Deep Space Nine. When they arrive, the news is showing Gowron is flexing his military muscle on the Federation. Only Odo soon realizes that there was something that the Founders were trying to hide from him while he was in the Great Link. That secret was that that's not Gowron at all. That's a changeling.
Oh no!
All right, Matt, as is customary on RTR, why don't you just give me a quick overall impression of the episode, and if you remember it from days of long ago, then just give me kind of an impression, maybe just about your first watch memories, but I guess maybe the cliffhanger is kind of the point of talking about here. So, again, what did you think?
I thought it was overall, it was a pretty good episode. Pretty solid season finale. I guess the whole Odo thing was kind of on its own, and then there was like a completely unrelated cliffhanger, which was a little bit odd, but also not... It was actually kind of effective, because it was pretty shocking. I do remember watching this during the original run of Deep Space Nine. Season 4, I was watching it pretty religiously, so I do remember that I watched it when it first came out, and I do remember that that cliffhanger was incredibly shocking, and that was a very long summer.
Yes, and I mean, that was kind of the way that Star Trek was in this era, correct? Like, almost all, after Best of Both Worlds, the cliffhangers became a pretty common occurrence in Star Trek.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, pretty much every... I feel like almost every season had like... Well, not all of them, but almost all of them had a cliffhanger of some sort. This one was pretty big.
So, I actually don't have a first memory of watching this episode, but I actually have a first memory of this episode. Because if you remember, back in the late 90s, that was when there was kind of this big resurgent in Star Wars. They re-released A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi in theaters with kind of new graphics. And when I was a kid, that was the big thing. It was the Star Wars books and the games and the movies coming back out. But there were a couple of people that I went to grade school with who obviously were Star Trek fans. And, you know, I haven't been in contact with them for years. But I do remember them talking about a character getting ruined. And I have kind of this strange memory of kind of like this lunch table and them talking about how, you know, this character is going to get wrecked. And, you know, he was so cool. He had all these special abilities and now they've ruined him. And that's kind of my first memory of this. And I actually had completely forgotten about it. And then when I was watching it, I was kind of having this memory back of like, this would have been a big deal, right? Odo was unique in the sense that he had the ability to morph and change and do all these things. So the idea of turning him human, I mean, now we probably just think about, like, we know that it doesn't last. But at the time, there must have been some rumblings of that this was kind of wrecking a really great character.
Yeah, and I think the end result of turning him back into the shapeshifter is sort of evidence of that.
Yeah, and it's hard to know whether it was actually planned that way all along or whether they kind of listened to the fans and tweaked it after the case. But, I mean, that is yet to be seen.
Showrunners never do that, do they?
I sure hope not. If they're listening right now, then, yeah, maybe they'll be. We'll see some changes in Discovery Season 3. In terms of background, because it is a season finale, you do get a lot of these little pieces and little extra stuff because there's lots of interviews and stuff like that. This is actually the only season finale that was submitted by a write-in script.
Yes, it is.
Is that not the craziest little piece of trivia? I mentioned the name at the beginning there, George Brozak. It was a write-in script. And it ended up being the season finale to Deep Space Nine. And, I mean, a lot of people would say this is kind of as good as it gets, season 4 or 5. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a pretty wild piece of trivia because, I mean, it is a great idea to say Gowron is a shapeshifter and also to sort of have Odo have to face the music for killing the changeling in the previous year's season finale. But, like, some fan wrote this? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm also kind of intrigued about who is reading all of these random scripts and deciding on which ones are good or mediocre or bad.
Some intern?
Yeah, like, you'd have to imagine a lot of bad ones coming in, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I bet, like, 99.8% of them are terrible.
But, I mean, even just in the ones that we have looked at, we have seen a couple of write-in scripts, right? So, I mean, they obviously utilized it and they did it a lot. And that probably just ties into the fact that they were making 26 episodes. So if you have write-in scripts, it just kind of does the meat of the work, I guess.
They needed some help, I guess, the writers. Yeah.
The second piece, Gowron being a chancellor was a way to allow the Federation to save the Klingons from the Founders and rekindle the relationship. So you might remember that in this period of Deep Space Nine, there is kind of tension between the Federation and the Klingons. But where they wanted to get to, they wanted kind of more Klingons and the Federation to team up. And so this was kind of used as a way to kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah, this whole season was kind of odd because they were like, season 3, they're building towards some major conflict with the Dominion. And then they do this like whole side, whatever.
Arc.
Side thing to where the Klingons and the Federation are, there's high tensions and there's, you know, skirmishes and battles and whatnot. And I don't know if this was like part of some master plan to like try and create chaos in the, on, you know, in the sort of the prelude to this Dominion thing. If they planned that ahead, then I think it was pretty effective. But if they just were like one day someone just threw up on the board in the writer's room, why don't we just have them mess around with the Klingons for a whole season?
True.
And then, so I don't know. If they planned it ahead, it was pretty effective. Because in the end, you realize that this whole Klingon thing that lasted basically the whole season was really just the Dominion screwing around and trying to create problems before they swoop in and kill us all.
And I mean, I guess in our war times, do we see this kind of thing happening where there's kind of a lot of confusion and a lot of turmoil leading up to the wars? I kind of think we do. So, I mean, it works in terms of a logical sense, right? Like, no, it's not like a war just starts, like, boom, out of nowhere. Usually there is kind of stuff that is leading up to it, right?
Well, yeah, if you look at the lead up to, like, World War II, there was a lot of, like, shenanigans going on beforehand. So it's not unusual to have these sorts of things going on.
Right, before the big blowout, right?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if they planned that and set it all ahead of time, then that is impressive.
Yeah, totally.
All right, now, Shallon, who is the owner of the Bajoran restaurant, was intended to be Odo's love interest for season 5, when he was going to be human. But this was kind of abandoned. I mean, I guess kind of the performance or just kind of the feel, I guess maybe sometimes when you're on the set or you watch the dailies or you just kind of get a feel, it just didn't really resonate. So they kind of used the teaser here to set this lady up, and I guess it just kind of didn't really work, so they just put it to the side. Any thoughts on that, or would you wish that he had a love interest? I mean, Odo has a really bad history of love interests, in my opinion, but
I don't know. I don't think we're really missing out all that much. She didn't really stand out all that much. He just sort of was like this generic shop owner that Garrick thought would be a good match for him.
Right, yeah.
I don't know, it just seemed so... It seemed kind of forced to me.
Well, you apparently felt the same way that the filmmakers or the TV makers felt, because that's exactly what they said. An actress piece, the actress that plays Grilka, Mary Kay Adams, she auditioned for the role of Shallan. We've seen crossover in Star Trek before. I don't think we've seen Grilka, though.
Wait, on RTR?
On RTR.
No, we haven't.
Not yet.
Only like two episodes. The odds are astronomical.
No. Okay, the next little piece here is when Odo is turned into a human, and he's kind of like laying on the rock, it is meant to symbolize Adam on the Sistine Chapel.
Wow, okay. Like, you mean the concept?
That was kind of like Rene Ojeador was kind of going for that kind of look.
Ah, okay.
Because that's supposed to symbolize kind of, I guess, like the birth of man, right? It's Adam and God, and they're touching fingers or
right.
whatever. Okay. Have you ever been to the Sistine Chapel?
No.
So I actually was just happened to be there in June. I was there for work, and it is not what you'd expect. It's like this really tiny little place, and you kind of go down these stairs, and there's a million people. And then you kind of look up, and they have the lights very low, and there's not really a lot of external outside lights. They don't want to wreck it. And so you kind of go in there, and you look up, and they have these security guards that are screaming, "Silence! Silence!" And so then people are still talking and horsing around and goofing around. And you just kind of look up, and you go, okay, yeah, there it is. And then they kind of push you out. It's... Yeah, it was not what I was expecting. I mean, it's super beautiful and everything, and it's obviously one of the most famous art pieces ever, but yeah, to go and see it is kind of weird. And these little pieces that you keep hearing about in these things is the kind of stuff that makes these shows so much more. It's the fact that Renee decided, you know what, I'm going to make it kind of look like this, or whoever, the director, decide we're going to kind of make it look like this. You don't think about it at the time. But it just resonates in a kind of a deeper level that you... I don't know, it just adds to it, to me, for me anyway.
That description of the security guards reminds me of this, like, comedy sketch I saw once where this guy's, like... He's doing this... he's pretending to be leading this, like, meditation class, and there's, like, a whole bunch of noise in the hallway, and he, like... He's like, just breathe in and out. And then he gets up and he opens the door, and he just, like, starts screaming at the people. Like, would you be quiet out there? We're trying to do a meditation class in here! These people are trying to relax.
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
We're trying to get spiritual in here.
Yeah,
be quiet.
The guys are yelling at you to be quiet. Anyways.
Moving on. Another little kind of, again, it's such a little tiny thing, but I thought that it was cool. Odo's walk on the promenade, when he's kind of molting away, Bashir kind of turns to him and says, you know, do you want me to clear the promenade? And he goes, no. He decides he's going to, like, walk through it. He was trying to show, or they were trying to show, that he wasn't weak in front of the people that he had sworn to protect. And he was actually inspired by Alec Guinness in the movie The Bridge on the River Kwai. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have not, no.
Okay, because there's kind of a similar kind of scene where he, you know, he's kind of in this heroic kind of thing, and he does this walk kind of along the beach. Again, just that little, you know, that little added piece that, they didn't necessarily need to do, but the fact that they added it in, it just adds so much to the character and the episode.
Rene Aubergeona, or however, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He strikes me as a very, like, well-learned actor. Because, like, to know all these things and to think to, like, I'm gonna model my walk across the promenade after this Guinness,
yeah, exactly.
In another movie. Like, it seems he's a very, like, well-read, well-learned actor to be putting those kinds of little touches on his performance. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it makes a difference. All right, Matt, these season finales kind of end up taking up a lot of time, so we better just jump right into the plot, headlong, dive into this one, and we'll see what we liked, what we didn't like, and everything in between. So, the teaser we talked about briefly, Garrick is trying to set Odo up And I guess my question here is, and this comes up a few times throughout the series, is why do people care that Odo is alone, number one? And is it really interesting or necessary for him to have a love interest? And then, I mean, I guess as like the third prong, if you want to just kind of go there, did any of the men any really work well?
The first part is easy. I have no idea why they care so much about Odo and the... He's clearly a very solitary creature, and I think it's pretty clear that he likes it that way. So I don't know why there was so much fixation on, oh, let's fix up the constable. I mean, I almost feel like maybe Garrick had, like, nefarious reasons for it. Like, oh, maybe if he's distracted, I can, like, I mean, if Quark were to do it.
True, that would be definitely...
I would be... Well, even in this episode, Quark, what was that line? He's like, oh, I expect my profits from smuggling alone to go up 50%.
Right, whatever, yeah.
Right, as he's leaving. So, I don't know. I just don't really understand why everyone else was so fixated on it. And I didn't even think it was... I don't know if it was really necessary for him to have a love interest. I don't really think it adds anything to his character. I mean, he's the cop. Dedicated cop, so I don't know. I don't know if it was really... I feel like it probably wasn't necessary. And I mean, the Kira thing towards the end of the series, it was kind of cringeworthy at times.
So what are your thoughts on... Did any of them work? Because he did have some kind of one-off relationships as well.
I don't think any of them really worked well. I mean, I think towards... I mean, the Kira thing kind of did. I mean, it worked out better than all the other ones.
Right.
But, I mean, in the end, they ended up... He ended up on the Founder's homeworld, and Kira was stuck on the station without him.
True. So, I mean, it didn't work out for the characters, but, I mean, in terms of the storytelling, I kind of feel like the one thing that Deep Space Nine did well is make it kind of feel very real. And I guess if you lived on a station, everybody would be super gossipy, and everybody would be into everybody's business and everybody's stuff. So, I mean, that maybe explains why there's this fascination with somebody who's not really kind of doing the same thing as everybody else. You might want them to kind of conform. So, I mean, that I guess I get, but I don't think that it's necessary. And I don't... It's weird, actually, because I actually liked the Odo Kira stuff when I watched it through. And then I think I went and read too much. And I read, like, online stuff, and I talked to people, and it was almost like I let them convince me otherwise, which is a horrible, horrible thing. But I always loved how the way that ended, too. I think that him kind of leaving her to go and spend with his own people was a bold choice. It was definitely not the one that you would have done as a, you know, the fan choice, I wouldn't think, anyway. There is, there's something that, I would probably say that one did work. But that's just my opinion. Again, if you have a different opinion, then write in and explain why you think that it didn't work. I've already heard every argument in the world, but... all right, let's move on here. I have a trivia question for you, but I am very skeptical. I know that you love Deep Space Nine. I know it's one of your favorites, yeah. But this is a toughie.
This is like level 10.
This is a tough toughness. One. I think I got you last week, and now I'm addicted to stumping you. Okay,
you're on a vendetta to. To stump me at trivia.
Exactly. So, Odo is being set up with the owner of the Bajoran Cafe.
Yes.
Okay. Now, we have been privy to a lot of different food options on Deep Space Nine. There's the Klingon restaurant. There's Quark's, of course. Now, there's a restaurant that is seen in the background that is an Easter egg for fans of another series. What is the name of that restaurant?
The Mos Eisley Cantina.
That is a great guess, but it is not correct. That's twice in a row.
Okay, what series is it?
Like, it is from, it's a wink and a nod to Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, is it the Caretaker's Array?
No, but that is a great, that's actually a great name for a restaurant.
I know, that's why I guessed it.
In the background, in a lot of the scenes actually, there is a restaurant that's called Shea Zimmerman.
Interesting.
Shea Zimmerman, and if you remember the doctor, his programmer was named Dr. Zimmerman. So, I mean, a kind of a cute little nod, a very, very tough trivia question. So if you got that at home, I'm tipping my hat to you right now. Alright, so once we come back from the title card, which I think we both agree is beautiful and amazing and sounds so great, although, did you skip it this week, or...?
Always skip it.
I never skip it. I just can't get enough of those title cards on Star Trek. But anyway, we come back, and Kira is pregnant. And there's actually kind of an interesting story about Kira being pregnant, both in character and out. Do you know what those two things are?
Okay, so the outside of the universe in the real world, wasn't it Alexander Siddig's child?
Yeah, so this is when she was pregnant, when they were married. They think they were married from like 97 to maybe like 2001. It was not really a super long marriage.
No.
Yeah, so this is when she was pregnant with Dr. Bashir's baby. And then that was kind of, that was Nana Visitor. But then the interesting story in universe, of course, is...
let's see. Keiko O'Brien was pregnant and their runabout got hit with, I believe it was like hit with like by an asteroid or something. And they needed to like remove the baby from her because there was, you know, she got hit by an asteroid. And Kira was like the only other available woman who would be able to support a child. So they basically, Dr. Bashir and his like medical wizardry was able to move the child from one to the other.
That is such a great little, like a great way of incorporating somebody's pregnancy into the show. And I like that a lot more than I like I think you mentioned last week, B'Elanna Torres with like that big jacket.
I was just going to say, that's a lot more imaginative than just like having her wear this gigantic, oversized, baggy smock for 5 months.
Right.
With no explanation.
Right.
And no trace of it afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought that was just such a great way to do it. And I thought it lends itself to a lot of interesting little pieces of story, which we'll see actually throughout this episode as well. The joke here, the light part of the episode is the sneezing. So rather than getting nausea and
morning sickness
and all this stuff, Bajoran women get sneezing. So is this a cute nod to alien culture, or did you think this was stupid?
If you had just told me this is what happens, I would say it's kind of stupid. But mm-hmm. the way that they used it in this episode, where like they're in a little meeting and she starts sneezing and they're like, you know, they're like giving bets on how many.
Right.
I thought it was actually pretty, pretty funny.
True. And I mean, like, you couldn't do this with a human woman, right? If she was running to the bathroom to throw up, you couldn't be betting how many times.
How many seconds before she stops? 15!
Not go. And I feel like a lot of women would happily take sneezing over barfing, or at least I would take sneezing over barfing. I thought that, you know what, this is one of the, again, just so those little added pieces, these little added things, it just kind of shows Bajoran culture in a different way and just how it's different. Alright, and that kind of flips us over to Gowron, and he has kind of this news speech, because Gowron actually is not even, he's not in the episode, he's just seen on TV. So he's doing this speech. I have to admit, like, I didn't really remember what was going on with the Klingons at this period of time. I didn't know what Gowron was doing at this time. And so to kind of jump into it, this is kind of the downside of, you know, telling a story beginning to end instead of the episodes, right? Because I was really confused with where the Klingons were at this time. And there was no precursor to what was happening.
Yeah, if you weren't really privy to, like, where exactly you were in the story, this would be very confusing. Mm-hmm. Because if you just dropped out of the sky and put this episode on, and you're like, wait a minute, is he, like, declaring war? Like, what's going on here? It would be a little bit hard to follow what's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a part of me that was kind of thinking, like, where was Mortauk, or was that later, and where does this kind of fit in terms of, like, where Next Generation was, because, like, Klingons were still in good terms during that section.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that part of it is one of the reasons why I think some people don't like the, you know, serialized stories. They just rather have a one-off. And, I mean, I guess the other question is like, was the foreshadowing for Gowron here, like, too obvious for the end surprise? Or is it just because I knew the outcome that...
Thinking back to when I first watched this, I don't seem to remember thinking that he was going to be a changeling when they were showing these, like, sort of newsreel things. I mean, I remember that that ending was just total shock. Shock.
Okay, so it worked.
I don't think it was too obvious. I mean, it's kind of hard to judge now because we know how it's going to end.
Right.
But I do remember that that revelation at the end was, like, pure shock. Now, maybe I was just too young to to realize that, oh, they're showing Gowron for no reason.
Right, on for like this random speech, and then that's it, right?
So, I don't know. I don't think it was super, super obvious, but I guess it's kind of hard to judge.
Again, it's hard for me to know just because it's, like you said, now we watch TV, we watch movies with such a fine-tooth comb. But I feel like, yeah, they just kind of, they at least planted the seed, let's say. Anyway, this episode's about Odo. I don't know why we're talking about Gowron and pregnancies and stuff. The episode is based around Odo, which they actually went to a lot for Deep Space Nine season finales, season premieres, kind of. Or at least that's kind of my recollection, was that the season finales kind of always ended with a changeling-based episode. Or is that not true? I'm not sure.
Well, there were a couple. I mean,
like, season one was basically like that gang, I guess. Remember the Circle or something they were called?
Yeah.
Season two was
the Jem'Hadar.
Jem'Hadar.
And I mean, when you think that there's only seven season finales.
Right.
And he features prominently in at least two of them.
Two of them. This one and the one
the
from
previous
season three.
One. Yeah.
And the last one.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's, I mean, everybody's in the last one, but, yeah, I mean, it definitely is, when you talk about Deep Space Nine, a lot of people think the Dominion, they think about Odo and the Changelings.
Yeah. Right? That's correct.
I have kind of just an off-wing Odo question. Is his love for policing and security and the law ever really explained in, like, an episode or a book or anything like that? Or is it just kind of like he is, that's his character trait?
I think there's sort of this, like, overarching concept that the Founders are interested in imposing or experiencing order, right?
Okay.
And so because Odo is a Founder, he has this, like, sort of innate sense of, like, things need to be orderly, which would sort of translate into, you know, justice, right?
So right, when the other ones aren't around, that's like the, like, that's actually really good, Matt.
Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't like ever, like, explicitly, someone sat down with him and said, Odo, why are you so upset? You know, why do you like being security or whatever so much? But it's just sort of, that's sort of how it's...
That's the culture.
Yeah, it's just sort of the culture of his people.
Okay, that's actually, yeah, that's really good. I didn't really piece that together, but I like that explanation a lot, actually. Okay, so the attacks. This, it's really kind of abrupt and sudden.
Yes.
So what did you think about kind of the CG where there's the wrinkles in his guts? And what did you think about the makeup when he's kind of, I keep saying molting. I think that's the right word, right? Where you're kind of peeling and...
Melting is
melting
almost,
yeah.
It.
He's always looks sweaty and coming apart, almost like like a butterfly out of a cocoon. Like he's coming undone. So, what did you think about both of those things?
Okay, I wrote down how awesome was Odo's makeup. So the makeup I thought was really good. Like you said, he looked like he was always sweating, and even like the costume, like his uniform, how they like sort of added those like sort of wet looking like bulges onto it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I mean, they've done that a few times in the series. I don't know if this is the first time that we see that sort of style of makeup or not, because there are other episodes where he sort of is like holding his shape too long or he's melting or whatever. But I always thought that they were really well done. The CG, I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was particularly bad.
It was the same as it kind of always is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. It was consistent with what we've seen previously, so I didn't really have a problem with it.
But I feel like the makeup is really, like, amped up. Like, the makeup is amazing in this. And I don't know really, like, I watched it in standard definition, But, like, you can tell there's kind of, like, sweating, and, like, it even looks like it's kind of, like, dripping at certain points. Like, I don't really know how they did that, but it looks really good. Like, so it really looks gross.
Yeah, a lot of, like, spray bottles or something. I guess, I don't know. Or maybe they put, like, some sort of weird, like, gel on his face to make it look like it was liquidy. I have no idea, but it would look...
It looked really good.
Yeah, I thought it would look really good.
Yeah, no, I thought that... If you did that episode today, I feel like it would probably look as, like, equal par.
But it would be, like, overdone with computers. Or
they would probably try to do it with computers and it wouldn't look as good, to be honest.
Maybe.
So that kind of leads to a funny scene between Bashir and Odo, which I don't really know if it's meant to be funny, but Bashir kind of makes a comment about how he knows so little about Klingon physiology that this could potentially be, like, a puberty of sort, and then he... then adds to it as like a little kind of funny or a menopause. Did you laugh at that or did you think that that was kind of like not the time to do it?
I laughed at Odo's reaction where he's like sticks, perks up, and he's like, I think you should keep that opinion to yourself, doctor.
Yeah. So they eventually decide that they're going to load up the Defiant, they're going to load up Odo, they're going to go over to the Gamma Quadrant, and they're going to try to find his home world. Because they think that if he goes into the Great Link, that they can vaccinate him against this illness, or they can cure him of this illness. And then there's this bizarre subplot where Garak decides that he wants to come along, and he makes this deal to entertain Odo over the course of the trip, and Sisko agrees to it. Did you feel like this made Sisko look really dumb? Especially knowing now what ends up happening once he gets there.
I think Garak's reasoning for wanting to go was kind of weak. Yeah, like, he wants to go ask them if there were any survivors from when that was really...
Right. Like, you could have just gotten somebody else to ask that question.
I guess for the rest of that little side story to work, you need to have Garak on the ship somehow, but I was like...
Couldn't have he just snuck on then?
Probably could have. He's Garak. He can do a lot of crazy things.
Right. So I just thought that made Sisko look kind of made him look dumb, didn't it? Like, he agrees to let him on here, and then he does the exact thing that everybody warned him he was going to try to do.
He should have listened to Mr. Worf when Mr. Worf said, tell Garak this ship is off limits to Cardassian spies.
That was such a good line. I've actually got that one starred as a,
like,
potential.
No hesitation.
Yeah, Worf is when Worf is kind of that begrudging, like, sourpuss, he is the best.
Sourpuss.
I guess that segues kind of more to a lovely scene, or at least I thought it was a lovely scene, between Odo and Quark as Odo is about to be taken to the ship. We did talk already about how he's going to make this triumphant march, you know, a hero's last march across the promenade with all the people there to see him. And there's this nice kind of scene between Odo and Quark. At this point, they have softened on each other, right? At least a little bit. It's not grisly level season one. I mean, even still, you can see there's a softening happening then, let's say.
Oh, totally. Yeah, this was probably one of the greatest scenes of the whole episode. Quark is sort of like gloating about how, like, oh, I hope you're, you know, take your time out there, because, you right. know, Quark's just gonna run amok with all kinds of, you know, criminal shenanigans, and Odo's just like, don't get too used to it, Quark, I'm gonna be back.
Yeah,
it's just total classic Odo Quark.
Yeah, and Quark kind of ends up by saying, like, yeah, I'm counting on it, right? Like, in his own way, he does want him to come back. Like, there's more to the relationship than just robber and cop, right? Like, there's lots of layers to that pairing.
It's true, yeah. Like, Odo's not just gonna, like, heave him into the holding cell anymore. We're sort of past that, where there's, like, I guess almost like a mutual respect between them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think that one of the great things that Deep Space Nine does is the relationships between people. There's lots of them, right? There's Bashir and O'Brien, there's Dax and Sisko, there's Quark and Odo. They do a great job of kind of pairing people off and having relationships out of those two. And I really like that about the series.
Hey, this is Matt, and you are listening to Random Trek Review. To get the latest podcasts and to read the RTR blog, visit our website at randomtrekreview.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching for Random Trek Review.
You can find us on social media, Twitter at Rando Trek Review, and on Instagram at Random Trek Review. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions and prefer old school email, feel free to drop us a line at randomtrekreview@gmail.com. Now back to the show.
All right, continuing on, we load up the Defiant, and we get this scene where we see a very relaxed crew. We'd already seen them already when they were doing the whole pregnancy, the sneezing thing. Now we see them on the Defiant, and we get this great scene where Miles is talking about having the two wives, because if you remember, at this point in Deep Space Nine, Kira had moved in with the O'Briens because she's pregnant with Keiko's baby, so they're both living there. And I don't know about you, I just thought this was a great scene. What were your thoughts on Miles and his predicament?
The banter and the sort of like camaraderie that they show really throughout sort of the later part of the series, and specifically in this episode, is like hilarious. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. It shows that they're more than just colleagues. They're actually friends. They actually hang out together. They actually sort of talk about their personal problems or what have you. And there's the scene where we have the sneezing, and there's like, it's just very brief, where, you know, Kira starts sneezing and they're all taking bets. And then there's this one that's a little bit lengthier, but it's also really good. Like, you know, Miles is like, oh shoot, they're talking, and as soon as I walk in the room they stopped, and you know, and yeah, it was really good. And I think that's one of the strengths of Deep Space Nine, is that their crew really sort of comes together throughout the course of the series.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, I think that Dax has a great line at the end as well, where she's kind of laughing and they go, what are you laughing at? And she's like, I'm just imagining being in a room full of so many naked men, which I thought was kind of another, again, just, I mean, fits with the character, fits with kind of the jovial nature of these interactions, which is, again, it's great.
Yeah, that was another good one too, where they're like talking about how, oh, we don't have the cloaking device on, I feel so naked.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's another one where a little moment of levity during this, like, you know, fairly serious ordeal.
Yeah, true. And I mean, I guess this is kind of the last of the laughs, because as soon as they get into the Gamma Quadrant, they send out the radar signals, or they're sending out the message that they're looking for the Founders, and they're found almost immediately. And the Jem'Hadar beam onto the ship. And
like
ten
ships show up.
Yeah, they kind of completely surround them. But there's this really weird thing that happens where they beam over, and one of the guys, the Jem'Hadar guys, grabs O'Brien's heart, and he kind of goes, aah! And I was trying to think, I was like, did they ever do that move again? Was like that just a one-time thing? Like, what is that heart grab?
I have no idea.
Okay, so you were confused as well.
It was a very bizarre thing, because they're supposed to be, the Founders and the Jem'Hadar are coming aboard to take Odo to their homeworld, and the Founders, like, even after the guy does that weird thing where he grabs O'Brien's chest, the Founders, like, there's no need for violence, right?
And, right.
Like, talks the guy down, but, like, wouldn't she have told them that before they beamed over? Like,
yeah.
We're here to help Odo. We don't want to do anything wrong. Like, it was very puzzling when he did that.
Yeah, it was such a strange little tidbit that they threw in there. So,
like, well, they must have needed to kill, like, an extra 30 seconds or something. Like,
grab O'Brien's heart as hard as you can. So, anyway, we find out, she basically says that, you know, they've done this, that Odo needs to come back and seek judgment for the stuff that happened with the end of season 3. So they put a little clip, a little magnet on the helm, and they're going to go to the home world so nobody knows where it is and nobody can find it. And so they go all the way back. He's going to face the music, I guess, is what we have. There's some other kind of little pieces. The female changeling talks to Odo. He says that he's going to agree to do it. Garrick talks to the changeling. Is there anything on the ship that's kind of worth discussion, or would you rather just kind of jump right to when they get to the Founders' homeworld?
I just thought that Garrick's reaction when the founder, like, basically tells him, like, Cardassia is screwed.
Yeah.
And he's just sort of smiles, his Garrick smile, and he's like, it was a pleasure to meet you.
Right,
and
yeah.
And he scurries off. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, she goes, Cardassia is dead, Cardassians are dead, and you're a Cardassian, so you're dead too, basically. It's like, oh, jeez. Like, she doesn't really see those guys in very high acclaim.
No, not really.
I mean, I guess we could get rid of this just straight up. Garrick has decided he's going to sneak onto the ship for the sole purpose of basically blowing up the home world. And he gets stopped by Worf, who kind of catches him in the act. What was your thought kind of on this whole kind of Garrick side quest, side mission? And did you think that the 6 months in a holding cell is enough for somebody that was literally planning to wipe out an entire planet of people while there's like war tension?
I thought he got off pretty easy, but, I mean, it's Garrick. They can't just lock him away forever. Although he would probably figure out a way to escape eventually and then sort of be back in the show.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that the punishment was next to nothing. I thought it was kind of a weird side plot, actually. This whole thing with Worf and Garrick, and they had, like, that strange fight in the Jeffries tubes. It just seemed kind of out of place to me.
You fight well for Taylor.
Yeah, that's true. Worf was on his game in this episode. He's got a lot of really great lines.
Yeah, there are some pretty good Worf zingers in this one, yeah.
But, I don't think it's a good plan. I think that the consequences are too lax. And, I mean, by the end of the episode, you kind of just forget the whole Garrick side plot, I thought.
Well, you know that I love Garrick.
You don't want to speak ill of him.
Well, it's not that I don't want to speak ill of him, but I don't want to, like, say they should have left Garrick out. Because that just is, like...
Seems like a sin to say.
Sacrilegious for me to say that. I mean, it wasn't... Like, did he really think he was going to be able to, like, sneak into the weapons controls and of all the, like, you know, powerful weapons that can blow up an entire planet? Like, did he really think that he was going to be able to, like, sneak in there without anybody noticing? I mean, it's not even a big... It's not, like, a galaxy-class ship where there's, you know, there's, like, 42 decks that he could, like, hide in to do it.
No, it's a tiny Defiant. Ship.
There's, like, you know, I don't know. It did seem a little odd, but I'm happy to see Garrick causing trouble.
Fair enough. I mean, as for the judgment, if you recall, back at the end of season 3, Odo killed another changeling.
He did.
And that was kind of the cliffhanger from season 3. And so they go down to the planet. There's not really much other than they go in. There's kind of a funny scene where Bashir is going to, like, skip a rock across the all the founders.
I wonder how that would have gone over if he'd actually done it.
Not well, I don't think.
It starts a war, oh no!
Yeah, I always kind of... The look on his face is really great.
Well, and Sisko, like, doesn't even say it. He's just like, doctor.
Right.
And he's just like, oh, right. And he puts the rock down. Yeah.
No, I like that a lot.
That's cool.
But he gets turned to a human. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? Is that a fair punishment?
Well, I thought that the explanation that the founder gave them for turning him human made sense to me. That, you know, he, in killing another shapeshifter or changeling, he essentially sided with what they call solids.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, I thought it was kind of fitting. I thought that from their perspective, it makes logical sense to turn him into a human. Whether it's, like, fair, like, as in, like, from an objective viewpoint, like, how do you judge?
True. I mean, I think that it makes sense, right? He has obviously decided that he's going to live amongst them, and he doesn't want to really go back to his own home world, so it makes sense that that would be the punishment. I guess the only thing that really is kind of questionable is, like, how did they have this power? Like, they have ultimate power. They can, like, force one entity of the Great Link to become, like, anything that they want, basically.
That's a good question, and that is one that I sort of struggled with as I was watching this. I was like, how did they do that?
Right.
Like, do they have, like, deep in that, like, pool of, you know, liquid changelings, is there, like, a, like, crazy lab where they can, like, do all this all weird out. Stuff? I don't know.
I mean, you have to just kind of take it for what it is. And of course he kind of appears up on the rock. He kind of looks weird as a naked human. did you think, or not really?
I didn't really notice any weirdness. Oh, he just looked like a naked guy.
I guess because he had the weird face. Like, they decided he's going to keep his normal changeling face, or at least the face that he could... He never was good at faces, so yep. He always kind of has, like, that plasticky-looking face. So they're going to leave him looking like that as punishment as well, as part of the punishment. It's definitely... it was surprising, for sure, because he was one of the most interesting, beloved characters on Deep Space Nine. So when Bashir starts looking it over and he sees that there's, you know, organs and digestive systems and
heart
stuff.
Rate.
It's, yeah, it's pretty shocking. It does lead to kind of getting some different things and gives him better perspective when he eventually does switch back. So,
yeah,
I do like that. All right, let's get to it, the meat of it, the big reveal at the end. So they get back, the news is that, Gowron is...
Has lost his mind.
He's lost his mind, he's doing crazy things. Odo recognizes that there was something that they were trying to keep from him while he was part of the Great Link, and then he kind of has this epiphany and realizes that the thing that they were trying to hide is that that's not Gowron at all. Gowron's been replaced with a changeling.
Yeah, that was. I remember it was pretty shocking at the time, as I mentioned before. And it's a pretty heavy thing when you think about all the shenanigans that had gone on during the whole fourth season, And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, like it was all a plot by the Founders. Like that's a pretty big, that's a pretty big kick in the guts. So. The only thing that was kind of, I thought it was kind of overdramatic the way Odo kind of was like, made that revelation to everyone. I thought it was a little overdramatic, but it was pretty, that's a pretty hefty cliffhanger to leave.
True, and I mean, it's a season finale, so you want to end on it like a dun, 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 right? Like a Who Shot Mr. Burns kind of level.
Or like 60s Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Like you want to leave them hanging. And so that was really kind of drawn out, which, I mean, this would probably mark the unofficial start of the Dominion War. Would you agree? Because, after they do this, they kind of become very suspicious. And it's like, it's not till the entire end of next season that the whole thing kind of
unravels.
Up. Yeah.
Well, it certainly sort of ratcheted things up a bit. Because, like I mentioned, they sort of went on this little side trip where they sort of had this whole Klingon thing going on, but this was it puts the whole season sort of back right to where it started.
Sure.
Right, and yeah, that it was a big deal. Like I remember that summer I was just like, holy moly, what's gonna happen?
Right,
like,
and this... I mean, you weren't disappointed when you came back either.
No,
right. Which I mean, I guess leads to my next question, and it's a hard question to answer, but I think it's a good one, is which section of the Dominion arc is the best, and what are your thoughts on this little section, the pre-war? I mean, I think you kind of already talked about it, but I mean, if you look at the whole series, the whole seven seasons, which section of the Dominion War did you like the best?
I would probably say the actual, like, 6 and 7, where that's like, it's full, it's gloves are off, time to fight. And I thought there was a ton of really good stories that came out of that, and I thought the whole ongoing sort of saga, I guess if you will, was pretty well done.
I'm actually quite interested in this, because my favorite part of the whole Dominion arc, and you know that I'm a big spy guy, right? I love spy stuff and kind of cloak and dagger stuff, and my favorite part of the Dominion arc was all kind of where you didn't know who was a changeling, and kind of like the stuff leading in, so kind of early of the next season, where, remember, they had to do the blood tests to see who was a changeling and who wasn't, and you couldn't trust anybody, and you never knew, who was going to turn next, and you got a couple of real shocking things, like, remember, Bashir got replaced, and this is kind of the start of it, Gowron getting replaced. So I think that one of the things that Deep Space Nine did really well was that they planted the seeds of this Dominion really early. There's some early season episodes where they just mention it.
Season 2.
Yeah, they just mention it, and then that's it. They just let it go. And then they bring up a little more piece, and they bring up a little bit more, and then by the time it blows up, everybody's just salivating for more and more and more. So, is the Dominion arc the best arc that Star Trek ever did?
Yes.
Yeah? Even better than Voyager getting home?
Yes.
Even better than the Enterprise being judged by Q?
The Q thing was...
I know it's the beginning and the end, but it was kind of
cool, but I thought this was better. Yeah, I enjoyed this more.
Yeah, and I feel like this is the one that they like had laid out, or at least the majority of it laid out, right from the very beginning, which, I mean, was a pioneer in terms of, shows doing that.
There were not many shows doing it at that time, no.
All right, Matt, let's take a look at the cast, the characters, and then we'll get to some production notes. Obviously, the special guest is Garak, and I know that you love Garak, so without kind of gushing too much, what were your thoughts on Garak at this period in Deep Space Nine?
I'll try to keep this under 10 minutes. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, Garak, at this point in the show, he's become more, a little bit more than this sort of enigmatic leftover Cardassian that, you know, Dr. Bashir had this weird fascination with. I mean, we've sort of gotten a little bit more of, like, you know, who is Garak? What was his past all about? But he does still have that, like, sort of mysteriousness to him, because he never really confirms or denies anything. He just sort of... I think his whole thing is that he just wants to keep you off balance as much as he can.
He even says, I'll tell so many half-truths and...
Bald-faced lies
that he won't have any idea what's going on, right?
Well, and there, that sort of comes through partway through the episode, because he, like, walks... He's talking to Odo, and he's like, so what do you think, Mr. Odo, about this? And Odo, like, it has nothing to do with what Odo's going to say. He says something like, I think you poisoned the Romulan proconsul and whatever. And Garrus like, you're getting warmer.
Yeah, exactly.
We sort of talked about his sort of the puzzling, like, side plot that Garak has, but I mean, as far as, like, his mannerisms and his, like, lines in this, like, they're, like, so spot on in this. It's just great.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, I think you mentioned that when we very first started, that he was actually your favorite character from Deep Space Nine, or your favorite recurring character, I don't remember which, but...
Favorite character in Star Trek, period.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's pretty high praise, considering how many characters there are, right? And he's not even in that many episodes, so... I like Garak here. This is probably not my favorite Garak episode, like, not by a long shot, because I don't really like the way that he's used and the way that he went about executing his plan. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, where I think I'd rather have him than not. Alright, the next one is the female changeling, which never gets a name. I guess that Odo is probably, like, the only changeling that really has a true, proper name. Everyone else is just kind of changeling entity kind of thing.
Changeling number 4.
Yeah, exactly.
You know where Odo's name comes from, right?
Do I know? I do know. Odo is like, it's from like ancient human civilization. It means like to shift or to move or something, isn't it? Like it's Roman for that or something?
Well, the in-universe explanation is that the scientists that studied him just called him Odo, which is like Bajoran for unknown sample.
Oh, okay, yeah. So it wasn't human, it was Bajoran, unknown sample. Okay, that's good. I like that, though.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, he does have a name, but it's not like a real name. It's just like a word.
Right.
But that's, yeah. I mean, you're right. None of the other changelings ever had names.
So. Right. So the female changeling is kind of given to this main character. The leader, I guess. Or is she the leader, or is she just kind of the voice of the rest of them? We don't really ever know.
Who knows?
All right, what are your thoughts on her, and how do you like her in this episode?
I don't know. She just was like a nefarious changeling throughout the series. I don't think there was really much evolution of the character. She was just like, you know, during the war, she gave them their marching orders, and...
Yeah, she's just kind of like the mouthpiece, right? Like, she just is... She does... That actress plays her really well, I think, and... she doesn't really ever reach the same kind of level of villainous that I would say, like, a Kai Winn would get. Like, Kai Winn makes your blood boil. This character is not quite there for me, but definitely villainous to a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah, I think part of it is that the actor's voice...
is very kind of soft.
It's very, like, soft and calm, which is very... odd for this character, because even when she like gets angry like at people, she doesn't even sound really angry,
right?
It's kind of a weird thing.
No, I agree 100%. Yeah, there's definitely like a something about it. It's not that it's bad. It's just that it's not expected. It's not like what human people would be like when they're angry. Or
yeah,
something.
And it's not like, and because of that, it's hard to like really get mad with this character,
right.
or despise this character, because when she speaks, it's just like, well,
that's true. And everything is kind of said and done as kind of like a matter of fact. Right? Like, even yes. with Garrick in this episode, she just says matter-of-factly, like, oh, we'll kill all the Cardassians.
Yeah.
And it's very cold in that way. All right, let's swing over to some Klingons, and let's look at Gowron, who is the Chancellor at this point. Gowron's not really in it a whole... He's a big piece of it, but it's not really like this is a Gowron episode or a Gowron performance. Do you like Gowron as the Chancellor, or did you prefer when it was others? What's your thoughts?
Do I prefer Kempek, the big fat guy?
yeah, and I think that...
I love my Chancellor's fat.
Yeah, so there you go. That's the one you want.
Well, and plus Gowron has those like really bulgy
he's got,
eyes.
Yeah.
They always look like they're going to pop right out of his head, especially yeah. when he gets mad or like excited about something.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't mind Gowron. He's kind of a... I guess he's okay.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm not a big Klingon person. Like, with the Klingon episodes, there's good ones, there's bad ones, there's in-between ones, but I never get super excited for the Klingon episodes. Like, they're not really my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. And I Gowron, I don't know. I never, I didn't like him as the Chancellor, because I kind of always feel like he's a bit of a, like, a little rat. Like, he always is kind of sneaky, and he's kind of underhanding, and I almost kind of feel like the Klingon Chancellor should just be a great big, massive guy who's just like super gruff and rough and tumble. Like, that would be my idea of maybe they should get one of those Hirogen guys from Voyager to be the Klingon Chancellor. Like, that's kind of the size I would want. You know what I mean?
The worst thing about it is like Duras was like even like the other contender for the Chancellorship back
right.
in Next Generation was like 10 times worse as far as being like devious. And
no,
dishonorable.
True, yeah, they're not really picking the best people here, are they?
No, they're not. They're not choosing the most Klingon of Klingons to lead them.
Right. I feel like my... Would you have a... So your favorite is that big guy?
How many have we really seen?
I feel like... Don't we see one in Star Trek VI? He's kind of more, like, diplomatic, though, that guy.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, he was... He was not really that great.
No, he's kind of forgettable, but...
Gorkon?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, he's more like a diplomat. He's not really like
yeah.
in the same vein.
He's not really the menacing like one, like he's going to chop your head off.
Kind yeah, of no, we still haven't seen the kind of, or you know, what about T'Kuvma?
Well, he wasn't really the Chancellor.
Wasn't he? He had that big ship.
I thought he was just like some crazy religious guy.
Okay, well, I hated that T'Kuvma guy. That guy was the worst of the worst. Let's switch gears and head over to Shallan Arroya. She owns the Bajoran Cafe. Do you remember the name of it?
Isn't that the name of it?
No, it's the Celestial Cafe.
Oh.
And they serve Bajoran food. So we kind of already talked about her. We kind of both agree that it just didn't really fit with the Odo character. One thing I actually kind of wish that we saw more of is the different restaurants. I know that we see... at the Klingon restaurant, but it was pretty much like a Quark's redress. And they're always kind of talking about these different restaurants on Deep Space Nine, which I thought was just such a great little kind of added thing.
Yeah, the Vulcan restaurant.
All right, last character is Rianoj, which is the girl with kind of like the crazy hair. The purple hair, who's kind of a smuggler, I guess.
Yep.
She kind of reminds me, there was a character in Star Wars, actually, who kind of had that exact same look. White skin and a big ponytail like that. This is not her first appearance, but it actually is the only time that she's named.
That's right.
We've seen her before, but yeah, this is the first time we actually get a name for her. Pretty forgettable or what?
Pretty generic.
I mean, nice that they used the same character over again, but...
Yeah, that's pretty cool that they sort of established a little bit of continuity, I guess, between these, like, petty criminals that keep showing up on the station.
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, I mean, it was a character. I have not much to say. Let's jump over to some production notes. First up is something I didn't really think of, and then I read it and was like, oh yeah, that's kind of true. Odo is the fourth main/semi-main character to be ousted by his people. The other three, of course, being Quark was ousted by the Ferengi. Worf was ousted by the Klingon earlier this season. And Garrick, it happened before the series started, but he was ousted by the Klingons. Do you have a thought on that? Do you think this is kind of going to the well one too many times, or what? A
lot of, misfits on this crew.
I guess Deep Space Nine is kind of like a crew of misfits when you think about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really think it was overdone because the stories behind all of them were actually pretty good. So
yeah,
I don't think it was. I don't think it's something they overdid.
It wasn't something that I noticed, right? And it wasn't as if they went out of their way, like, all right, now Kira's giving up her Bajoran culture, and now Dax, it's your turn, right? So, I mean, I feel like it fit for the characters, because all four of those characters, I would say, are kind of outcasts.
Oh, very much, yes. Right? And it's not even like the first time Worf has been ousted by his people, so it's not like that one is unbelievable.
Yeah, really. Anytime that they're short, like, they're at 25 episodes, they need one more, like, we'll kick Worf out of his family.
Worf will be dishonored once again.
Yeah. All right. Now, this is actually a different illness that Odo suffers than the one that we see later, because this happens again, basically.
Yeah, towards the end of the series.
Right.
Yeah.
And but that time it's a Section 31 virus.
Yes.
And I guess in that one, it was, what was it? It put into him at Starfleet headquarters. They basically infected him when he was doing some like routine scans or something.
Yeah, they were doing tests on him, I think, of some sort at like the medical Starfleet medical or something. I don't know. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, but this, I guess, is kind of like the worst thing that could ever happen to a changeling, is that you start to come undone and you start to kind of fall apart.
That would be pretty crappy. So, imagine like your skin disintegrating and all your like guts and stuff just like started falling all over the place.
But he's like, his idea of sleeping is to become liquid, right? So I don't really get why he doesn't just turn liquid and then just stay like that for a bit, rest.
Yeah, but then they wouldn't be able to do the wicked makeup and stuff.
True, exactly. Very true. And last but certainly not least is that Cirroc Lofton or Jake Sisko doesn't show up in this episode.
That's truly a shame.
You're really hiding your voice there.
How do you throw him in here, though?
That is true. I mean, I am one of those people that kind of think that, like, you know, you could always just have a scene where the guy walks by or, you know, stands. He's leaning up against the bar at one point. But yeah, it's true. He doesn't really fit in this episode other than if they had randomly thrown him in to wave out the window as they were leaving or something.
Or just, like, standing on the promenade while Odo was like doing his walk.
Yeah, they could have done that, but then they would have probably had to pay him.
Exactly.
Right, so it just wasn't worth it.
It wasn't in the budget for this episode.
Sorry, Cirroc.
We gotta do the cool CGI effects for Odo.
Too bad. You can like hit the bricks.
Get an early start to your summer hiatus.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's anything else left to talk about here. Maybe you should just give us your memorable scene or your memorable quote, whatever you happen to thought was great. Give me your final thoughts and a rating out of 5 Great Links.
Well, as far as memorable scenes, the big revelation at the end was pretty memorable. And I also, I kind of gravitate towards some of like the bantery scenes in this episode. Even that first scene where Garrick is like trying to set Odo up, I thought even that was had some good parts to it, even though it was kind of a cheeseball concept. And as far as like favorite lines, I think I'm even gonna go to that first scene. There's that part where the woman leaves, and Odo's like, I thought you had called me in here to report a crime. And Garrick says, now that you mention it, I believe I have witnessed a crime. And he like goes off about how like Odo was like cold and not interested in this woman that was obviously very interested in him. And I thought that, well, I don't remember the exact line.
But yeah, no, pretty, I know that. It was pretty funny. It is good.
It was classic Garrick. And I don't know, my final thoughts, I'd say that this was a pretty solid episode all around. As far as where it ranks on like season finales, I mean, it's pretty good. I think the cliffhanger at the end was like really a pretty big deal. So I'm going to give this one, let's see, what are we out of? 5 out of Great Links. I'm going to give it 4 Great Links out of 5. It was a really good episode and pretty solid season finale.
All right. I think for me, the only line that really made me laugh out loud was on the Defiant, tell them the ship is off limits to Cardassian spies. That one made me laugh out loud. The puberty menopause thing was cute, and the convoluted mating rituals was funny. You Fight Well for a Tailor was a close second. There's a lot of good scenes here, man. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you could make an argument for being. Even just a reveal at the end would probably be enough. But that line just made me laugh, and so that's the one I'm going to use so that when I look back at this later, I'm going to laugh again, because that was such a great line. This is not one of my favorite cliffhangers. I would say that it's probably up there, but it's definitely not one of my top all times. I think that it's a great one. It has a good cliffhanger. I think that this is the beginning of all the best stuff in Deep Space Nine. The next season and the season after is probably my 2 favorite seasons of Star Trek ever. So this is kind of the lead up to it, which is exciting. But it's just not up there with, you know, Best of Both Worlds, Inner Light. Like, it's not up there with Scorpion or some of the other finales that, for me personally, I would put higher. And, I mean, it seems strange to do it because last week I gave Imaginary Friend a 4, but I'm giving this one a 4 as well. I like them for very different reasons. And I think that that's the beauty of Star Trek, is that every week you're getting something that has the potential, anyway, of being completely different. All right, Matt, that is the red alert siren, and of course that means it is time to draw a brand new episode for next week. How are you feeling?
I feel pretty good.
Oh, confident, eh?
Yeah, I feel like we're due for a good episode that I'll know.
Okay, and are you want to try to predict the series like I did last week?
I'm going to guess original series.
Original series. Okay. So let's just dig into the very fitting bucket hat this week. Ooh, this is a two-parter.
Two-part episode.
This is a two-part episode. And if you do not get this one, then I think I'm looking for a new host. So, yeah, I think that you'll get it.
I guess I'm due for a two-part episode because you did the last one.
That's true. We did Descent back in season 1. And you know what? I think you'll find that the two-parters are a little bit easier to handle, because they're usually pretty popular, pretty famous. We're still on to the Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
We are on Deep Space Nine. We are season 1, episode 1, Emissary. So Matt's going to just kind of collect his thoughts here and make sure that he doesn't mix it up with one of the other series premieres, which I hope he doesn't.
Or the other episode called The Emissary.
The Emissary, yeah, exactly. That would be embarrassing.
Yeah, so Worf's girlfriend comes on. Just kidding.
So Matt's going to collect his thoughts. While he's doing that, you should write down some stuff at home as well. Of course, if you ever don't want to grade your own paper, you could always send it in to us at randomtrekreview@gmail.com, and we'll grade that and send it back to you. You can always check back to the blog on the off Tuesdays. Usually we have some top 5, top 10 lists. We've got location stuff. We've got all kinds of stuff on the blog, so make sure that you're checking that frequently. Matt, it looks like you're very confident over there.
I think I'm ready to go here.
Okay, so you only get 2 minutes. Make sure that you get everything that you want to say in the time. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, and go.
Okay, this is the series premiere of Deep Space Nine. It starts with a flashback to Sisko, who is on a ship in the Battle of Wolf 359. And then it sort of goes back to the present time, where he's being assigned to this hideous Cardassian space station, which Starfleet is taking control of in orbit of Bajor. And his old friend Jean-Luc Picard is one of the ships that is one of the, you know, people that are sent there to kind of get him get him started, and he has to deal with all kinds of crazy shenanigans. There's, like, robbers on the promenade, including Nog. And, you know, he has to deal with Kira, who's, you know, doesn't believe the Federation should be, you know, operating the station. And then the science officer and the medical officer arrive, and for some reason they find these weird readings near this, like, asteroid belt or something. And so they go to investigate, and they discover a wormhole, which leads to the Gamma Quadrant. And inside the wormhole are these aliens called, well, they don't actually know at the time, but they're actually the Bajoran gods, the prophets. And these aliens, like, have a hard time understanding, like, linear time, and so they sort of capture Sisko, and he tries to explain to them how linear time works. And that leads to some interesting scenes that I'm sure we'll talk about. And meanwhile, while Sisko's missing, the Cardassians decide to retake the station. So I believe three ships show up, and there's a bit of a battle. The station doesn't really stand much of a chance because it's all been, you know, completely disheveled when the Cardassians left. Oh, and Gul Dukat shows up earlier. I should probably mention that. And basically the battle ends when, you know, Dukat's ship gets, like, towed back by Commander Sisko.
And that's it. You're out of time. That is pretty, that's pretty conclusive. I think that you pretty much covered as much as you could possibly cover in 2 minutes, that's for sure.
I think I've probably watched this about 10 times.
Okay, so this is an old favorite for you. And I guess they tow the station to the wormhole in this episode, or is it not?
That happens.
I think that's kind of how it ends. All right, amazing. Amazing work. Of course, with a two-part episode, that means that Matt's actually going to be on the hook for back-to-back hosting duties. He will be back in 2 weeks for Emissary Part 1, and then 2 weeks after that for Emissary Part 2. So he'll get a grade for both of those things. And that gets me off the hook for a little bit. I'm not too mad about that. So make sure that, you know, this is probably one that maybe you haven't seen yourself in a while. So go and dust it off and give it a watch along with us. And join us next time when we see Emissary.
So long, folks.